Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nerton, the Marx editor. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about changes to the design system in Europe. Following several years of discussion, the European Commission published its proposed revisions to the Designs Directive and Regulation in November last year. As we'll hear, they include some important changes to procedures and practices, and also address the tricky issue of spare parts. To help us understand the plans and to put them in context, I'm joined by three members of the Marx Designs team. Mikas Miniotas is chair of the team and a partner at AAA Legal Services in Estonia. Eva Majewski is an IP lawyer at Lübbecke Lehmann in Berlin. And Oliver Nilgen is a certified IP specialist and part of the litigation department at Meisner Bolter in Germany. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having me.
Hello.
Mikas, can I start with you? As your co-chair of the designs team, can you just tell us a little bit about the EU design reform process to start with?
Yes, thank you. It's been already 20 years since the design law has been harmonized in EU through the directive and also introduction of community design. And the Commission has been tasked with reviewing how this design law is functioning. And it started with a review in 2016, which was done by Commission. And since then, we have had quite a few consultations where Marx has been actively participating. In 2019, 2020, 2021, and now the latest one was in November, end of November, we heard about the proposal for making changes to regulation, implementing regulation and directive. And then Mark has been quite busy through the holiday season to review these large documents and give comments. So it's been quite a long journey, but it looks like we are getting close to an end of it, to some results.
So we might see some further developments later this year, I guess.
Yes, it looks like we will not have any further possibilities to comment, at least at this stage. This is our understanding. And the Commission is looking forward to go through with these changes and put this up to Parliament for vote. But we're very excited about the changes that are coming.
So maybe we can just talk a little bit more about some of the changes. Oliver, turning to you, I think the Commission say that the proposals aim to simplify and streamline the procedures for design protection. So can you just explain some of the key changes that are planned?
Yes, of course, James. Again, one of the major tasks of the European Commission's proposal is aligning national procedures with those at the EU IPO. So, for instance, it is proposed to update and broaden the current definition of a design in order to provide greater legal certainty and transparency as to the eligible subject matter of design protection. At the same time, the grounds for non-registrability should be set out in an exhaustive manner, ensuring that the procedure for obtaining a registered design presents the minimum costs and difficulty to applicants. There are further proposals. For instance, it is proposed to provide for the possibility to combine several designs in one application, so we have the multiple application system, and without requiring that the combined designs concern products of the same Locarno class, as it currently is, which should be end up in a cost benefit to the applicants. It is further proposed to provide for the option of requesting deferment of the publication of a design application for a period of 30 months from the date of filing of the application. This is also a very good benefit to the system because currently the period of deferment differs largely throughout the member states. There is further a proposal to provide for an administrative procedure for challenging the validity of a design registration, which should be handled by the national IP offices. This is also a great advantage because invalidity proceedings, which will be held before the regular courts in the member states, are expensive and the results of such invalidity proceedings are not predictable because many judges may not be familiar with design rights. And we have further provisions on counterfeit goods in transit, which is now included in the regulation, which is already in place with trademarks. So we know this concept and works very well. And at least another new advantage is a design notice, which should be made available to the holders of registered designs, permitting them to inform the public about the registration of a design, which is very similar to the R in the circle symbol we all know from trademarks, and which at the end should be a D in the circle.
So it sounds like there's some quite positive changes from the point of view of design applicants, and also some sort of a little bit of harmonization with the way that trademarks are managed as well.
Yes, this is one of, again, one of the major tasks of the Commission's proposal.
And are there any important issues that Marx has identified that need still to be addressed, do you think?
Yes, we had long-lasting discussions within our team and with the other associations, as Mika's already mentioned, and although we welcome the broadening definitions of designs and products to encompass new technology developments and allowing users to represent designs dynamically, the 7-view requirement remains unchanged. And this is something which we, for many years, wanted to abolish this, or at least allow the EUIPO and the national offices a higher number of views in one application. And a new advantage of the proposed procedure is that applicants can amend the representation of the design filings in immaterial details, but according to the very strict provisions which are now in place with the EUIPO, this new option should offer a solution to resolve errors in the application in a more efficient way. And what is further proposed is simplifying and reducing the fee structure for filing design applications and for renewals in the first 10 years of registration. The downside of the proposal is that the renewal fees are increased after this first 10 years period. And last but not least, the introduction of a EU-wide repair clause is, of course, one of the highlights of the Commission's proposal.
So I think we need to talk a bit more about the repair clause, because that's very important and has attracted a lot of comment, I think, over the years. Eva, I think you've got the difficult task of explaining that. So can you explain briefly why the repair clause is important and what the Commission is proposing?
Yeah, sure, James. I'll give my best to explain it briefly, because as you already said, this is a rather complicated issue. I think First of all, as regards the importance of the proposals of the Commission as regards the repair clause, it is fair to say that the repair clause has been discussed during the last 20 years since the introduction of the regulation and the directive. And the reason for it is that the question of an existence or non-existence of a repair clause was a remaining part that has not been harmonized yet 20 years ago. Okay, so because the member states couldn't agree on a common line, on a EU-wide line, this was something that was set aside. And the impact of a repair clause is pretty high, since the existence but also scope of a repair clause in the end decides about the existence of a whole business area, which is the aftermarket for repair parts by third manufacturer and retailer. So when answering the question what the Commission is proposing, it is probably in a first step important to understand how the situation is today. The status quo is actually different on a EU level and compared to the national level. So on a EU level, there is right now a repair clause. So with regard to EU designs, it has been introduced with the regulation in Article 110. It is though still named a provisional repair clause, which is probably kind of ironic if we consider that we are talking about more than 20 or almost 20 years now. This repair clause was subject of several conflicts, but also very important court cases, as for example the Acacia case of the ECJ, which gave us a bit guidance in the past of how broad or narrow the scope of the repair clause when it comes to EU designs is and has to be interpreted. And then on the other side, on a national level, there was no provision set down in the directive. So there was no standard that the member states had to apply to their national design law, but one merely agreed on a so-called freeze plus provision. So this freeze plus provision meant that the status quo in each national design law of the member states could, for that time being, stay as it is. But if changes were made, only by introducing a repair clause, so only changes that went into the direction of liberalization of the aftermarket for spare parts. So the result was that some countries, few countries, already had a repair clause in their national design law. Many of them did not, for example, Austria, and for a long time also Germany. And then some of them, as for example Germany just 2 years ago, introduced a repair clause during the last years. And this led to kind of a mosaic situation as regards to national design law, no harmonization on that aspect. And now the Commission proposed a repair clause on both levels. So there's going to be change on EU level. So there is a repair clause introduced in Article 20A of the Kyoto proposal with regard to EU designs, but there is also a repair clause corresponding to that EU regulation in the directive, which forces the member states to adapt a repair clause into their national law as well. And on both levels, there are changes, like the repair clause that is proposed for the regulation differs from the current provision because it is limited to must-match parts. So it's, one could say, narrower than it is right now. And on a national level, there is the decision of the existence of a repair clause, which will lead to changes in a couple of member states. So, yes, this is a big change for some member states, but especially industries that are involved in the areas concerned.
Thanks, Eva. So what are the key points then for businesses who are involved in these kind of industries to take away, and what plans do they need to think about going forward?
Well, I think if the proposal from the Commission comes as it is right now and is implemented on a EU level but also in a directive, then I think first of all it is important to note that even though the automotive industry has been in the spotlight in the past as regards the question of the repair clause, it is as such applicable to all complex products, which has to be understood rather broad. And then second, to the question whether any changes would come with this proposal. Yes, I think seeing that the mosaic situation as regards to repair clause falls away, there is a common standard, and we think, or it is highly likely, that companies rather decide to go for EU-wide protection, whereas right now it could be a strategy to file for registration for spare parts on a national level as well, where there is no repair clause. Okay, so since there is no difference handling any longer, the prosecution strategy could switch or concentrate even more to the EU design, to the EU IPO.
Interesting, yeah, so we'll have to watch what happens with the proposals and see how they're going to affect people.
Yes, that's true. We are very excited, as probably everyone is, about the repair clause.
And Eva, what about the transition period that is proposed? How will that work in practice?
Good point. So even though the member states would have to implement the repair clause into the national law, the current proposal stipulates a grace period that is 10 years. For the old designs registered under the old, I name it the old national law, the current national law, they would still be protectable for 10 years, and after that the repair clause would come into force as regards the designs registered under the new national law, but of course also as regards the old designs. So this is important too.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much, Eva. That's very helpful. And just coming back to you, Mikas, I think you mentioned, or certainly we've said, that Marx worked closely with other associations, ECTA and INTA, throughout this process of design reform. Can you say very briefly what have been the benefits of that cooperation and how has it worked in practice?
The logic behind making joint positions is actually to give them more weight before the Commission. We believe that having the possibility to work together with the best practitioners representing design owners throughout different organizations and putting something, a joint paper together, is better than having, for example, three different joint papers that might have a common bearing on some aspects but have some different nuances. It waters down, I think, the submission compared to one coherent and agreed submission. So we have been really blessed to meet, albeit virtually, but practitioners from other organizations who do similar work as ours, and put our heads together and come with a constructive and then clear and precise suggestions to Commission or proposals, where we congratulate the achievements, but at the same time also bring out the aspects that we think need further addressing.
And I think the European Commission itself has said it welcomed that cooperation, is that right?
That's true. I believe it's from the practical point of view, having one paper to look at comparing to three is always better, I think it's more concise.
Yes, and I think really good that the associations can work together in that way and you know, identify areas where there's agreement and common positions.
Good.
Thanks very much, Mika. So turning to Oliver, at a very high level, how do you think these proposals will affect design protection in Europe? I think you summarised some of the key points already, but what are the benefits that you think applicants and owners of designs will see if and when these proposals are implemented?
Yeah, our experience is that design rights are still underused and underestimated. And with registration being a matter of a few days and relatively low costs, designs provide quick and effective protection, which is particularly interesting for companies in fast-moving industries, or at least when you attend trade fairs. So this will be definitely affect design protection and makes it easier for applicants to go for registered design rights. As the definitions of design and product, as well as the rules on the scope of protection, will be updated in response to technological advancements such as 3D printing, NFTs, and the metaverse, design protection will become also more attractive to other groups specialized in the IT field, like IT developers and the gaming industry and so on. So at the end, I think the overall objective of the reform is to make registered designs more relevant and attractive to business. And as we now heard from Eva, the introduction of an EU-wide repair clause will open and increase competition throughout the businesses, especially in the automotive spare parts market, but I think also to other areas like furniture, for example, lamps or household electronics.
So overall, it sounds like it should be good news for designers and also for those of us who work in designs and the legal issues around designs.
Absolutely, yes.
Good. And we're coming towards the end of the podcast, Eva, but maybe you could just pick out one or two key points or takeaways that we haven't yet discussed. Is there anything in particular in the proposals that you think we should pay attention to that we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, I think we talked about a lot already, but if I have to pick one or two topics that the Marx team thinks is interesting in the Commission's proposals, there's a new provision which allows to modify the illustrations of a registered design after registration at any time. This would be different compared to the current legal situation. And this is something that Marx agrees with and thinks is positive for the better handling of registration procedure. At the same time, we think that the standard, the provision allows alterations or modifications in immaterial detail, could use a bit clarification from the Commission. So the question what immaterial details means, but generally I think for the registration procedure from a prosecution side, this could be a very important change. And then a second topic is probably rather a question mark that remains right now from Marx's perspective. Is the question whether or not there was an intended change as regards the territory of first publication for the protection by way of a non-registered EU design. So the wording of Article 11 that is stipulating the requirements for non-registered community designs did not change, but another article, 110A, was deleted. And this article was used constantly in order to explain and clarify that when you want to have protection by way of a non-registered community design, first publication has to be in the territory of the EU. And this clarification was deleted, but with no explanation. So I think this could be important for the future. And we are interested in seeing whether the Commission provides some clarification as to their intention there or not.
Thank you. So there's still a few issues to keep watch on and look out for further developments, by the sounds of it. On that point, Mikas, what are the next steps in the process? Do we have any idea about when the reforms might be implemented, and do you have any further interventions or any further work planned as a team?
It's a difficult task to predict the future. We hope that this consultation, that the submission had to be sent to Commission by the end of January. We hope that the Commission will review these positions from different stakeholders during this year, and we hope that the two proposals to change the directive, implementing regulation and regulation, will be transmitted to European Parliament and Council for adoption under the ordinary legislative procedure. When this is done, then we know that usually once the proposals are adopted, the EU member states will have to transpose the new rules of the directive into national laws within 2 years. As to regulation, most amendments to community design regulation will become applicable, we believe, within 3 months after entry into force. So we might see effectively much faster the implementation of the regulation, and it will take a little bit longer with the directive.
So it's been a long wait, hasn't it? But maybe we'll see some further developments in the next few months or in the next year anyway.
Yes, we are very excited, and we look forward to this review becoming a law.
Very good. Okay, well, I'm sure your team will continue to monitor developments, and if there are significant further developments, maybe we can have another podcast, or certainly there'll be updates from the team on the Marks website and social media and blogs and so on, I'm sure.
Yes, we will keep you updated, and we'll look out for any news.
Thank you very much. I know you have a big designs team, and they do a great job in monitoring all these things. So we look forward to hearing more from you in due course. But for today, I think that wraps up today's podcast, this episode of Talking Marks. Thanks to Mikas, Eva and Oliver for taking part, and to all of our listeners for joining us. We look forward to seeing some of you at the Marks team meeting in Frankfurt in March. Please do say hello if you're there. And we have several more podcasts lined up for 2023. But for now, it's goodbye. I hope you'll join us again very soon on Talking Marks.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for having us, James.
Goodbye.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.